Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the film Nothing But a Man from 1964.
I'd like to talk about an old film today, not that old, a few decades old, from 1964. It's a marvelous movie. It's available very, very readily on streaming, and I just totally recommend it. Also, the Criterion Collection, an excellent company, has just put out a new video edition for home video, and it's got some extras on it where there are talks with the director and other people involved in making the movie. And so I just thought this would be a great time to call attention to this film. It's called Nothing But a Man, and it's very much a story of Black life in the Deep South. And nowadays, when we have so much trouble with ongoing racism and also anti-Semitism, which plays a part in what I'm about to say, this is a movie I think is a very constructive and positive movie, and it's well worth calling attention to. So, Nothing But a Man. It was directed by Michael Romer, and it was written by Michael Romer and Robert Young, not the actor Robert Young, but a filmmaker who later called himself Robert M. Young. They wrote it together, and there's a really marvelous little anecdote in one of the video extras on the Criterion Collection's new edition of the movie, where the director, Michael Romer, remembers that the star, Ivan Dixon, who's a black man, the movie's all about black people, Ivan Dixon, who plays the leading role, was skeptical about the project at first. He read the script, and then he said to his agent, "How can two white guys tell this story?" Because both Michael Romer and Robert M. Young are white guys. And the agent replied, "They're probably Jews." And Romer chuckles about this, and he says it's really an astute remark. It's quite a clever remark, because back in the 60s, when this movie was made, there was a tremendous sense of identification between blacks and Jews in America. And Mike Romer goes on to say that in his own experience and also his father's experience as a Jew in Germany, feeling under that kind of economic and social pressure, he says, he felt a very strong identification with black people when he came to America. All of that feeds into this wonderful movie, Nothing But a Man. Again, it was made way back in 1964, but it really just is such a beautiful movie to look at even now. It seems very, very real. Now, 1964, when this movie was made, was a very interesting year. Of course, Jim Crow racism was all across the American South, and there was a whole lot of racism going on in the North as well, as there still is. But there were also a lot of winds of change back in 1964. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was signed into law. The 24th Amendment got rid of poll taxes. Martin Luther King Jr. won the Nobel Peace Prize. Malcolm X founded the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And hundreds of activists went to Mississippi for the voter registration campaign that was known as the Freedom Summer. And a very large number of them, by the way, were Jewish. So again, you have that alliance between blacks and Jews, which figures into this movie, which is a story about black people, but made by a couple of Jewish filmmakers. Mike Romer had come from Germany as a teenager. In fact, he turned 17 while he was on the boat to the United States. And the other writer of the movie, and who he also was the cinematographer, Robert M. Young, he was making public affairs programs for television. And they had worked together on a documentary in 1962 made in Italy about a poverty-stricken slum. But then the network, NBC, wouldn't air it because they were afraid that American viewers would find it too strong. So these two guys, Mike Romer and Robert Young, decided to make a movie that could not be taken away from them. And Young had recently made a movie about the sit-in campaigns back in the Jim Crow South. And so they decided they would go south South and look for a story there. So they had a tiny bit of money, they had a letter of recommendation from the NAACP, and they went South and they stayed with one black family after another until their money ran out, and they couldn't find a topic that they felt would make an excellent movie. Then Mike Romer, who directed the film, realized that a story he had written about his own family could be adapted to a Southern environment. And again, he explains this in one of the video extras on the new Criterion Collection edition of this movie. He says, back in Germany, during the Nazi era, Jews were not allowed to sit on park benches. They weren't allowed to go to the movies. There was the idea that Jews brought some kind of contamination with them. And Mike Romer said he found that to be very much the way white people thought about black people in the Deep South. And by the way, he and his co-writer didn't feel the North was much better. So they wrote the screenplay in a few weeks, and then they got financing for it, and then they made the movie. Interestingly, even though this movie takes place in Alabama, it was filmed in southern New Jersey, which, to my surprise, I found out, is actually below the Mason-Dixon line. So in a way, southern New Jersey is the South. And that's where they made the movie. Also, there's a large black population in southern New Jersey, and there is architecture that would be right at home in Alabama, which is where the story takes place. The story itself is very modest, and it's very archetypal. The main character, played by Ivan Dixon, is a guy named Duff Anderson, and he works as a railroad laborer. And one night, when he has nothing else to do, he kind of wanders into a revivalist church service, and he starts talking with a young woman named Josie. Her father is a conservative preacher. They get along. Duff and Josie get along. The laborer and the preacher's daughter get along. Unfortunately, her father, very conservative, takes against Duff the first time Josie brings him home, but they fall in love anyway. Along the way, Josie learns that Duff has a 4-year-old little boy being cared for by a foster mother who really doesn't care much about the kid, and Josie wishes that Duff would go and reclaim the kid, take him back for himself. So they talk about that a bit, but they don't do anything right away. Duff and Josie get married. Duff takes some small-time jobs with white employers, and he loses them when he talks back to racists. And the story proceeds from there. At the very, very end of the movie, we see growing stresses in the marriage of these two. We see Duff's final encounter with his father, who is in the last stages of alcoholism. And we do get the idea at the end of the film that there will be a stable and loving future for Duff and Josie. So this is what the story is about. It's very simple. And again, it's very sort of archetypal. It's the kind of story that could take place in any people's lives. In this case, it takes place in the Deep South, among black people, among all the oppression and repression of the Jim Crow era. One of the things that you need when you're telling a story in a movie about people who are ordinary people living everyday lives, you have to have the speech, the gestures, the behaviors have to be just right. And oh, here the movie just stands out so much. They originally offered the leading role to Sidney Poitier, who turned it down. But Ivan Dixon is so excellent in it that you can't imagine how even the great Sidney could have done better with it. Ivan Dixon already had a lot of experience on the stage and in television acting. Later on, he became a prolific movie director himself. And Ivan Dixon projects these contradictory qualities of the main character. Duff is quiet, yet at the same time, he asserts himself. He is soft-spoken, but at the same time, he is tough as nails deep down. He is a very loving man, yet he is very prone to anger as well. That's one of the things that gets him into trouble with his racist employers. And without any hint of actorly display, Ivan Dixon just projects these things just so perfectly. You really believe him as a character, as a human being. Now, Josie is played by Abby Lincoln. And when this movie was made in the 60s, she was already a very popular singer. She was not an actor. She was a singer. And she was very heavy into the civil rights movement. And she gives this main female character, Josie, an unforced emotional depth. And it's fascinating to observe that this was only Abby Lincoln's second appearance on screen. And her first one was in a movie that couldn't have been more different. It was a wild rock and roll comedy called The Girl Can't Help It. So there she moved from that to the very quiet, soft-spoken, and very human drama of Nothing But a Man, she makes that move very, very, very smoothly and gracefully. Another major character, Duff's father, who, as I mentioned, is in the last stages of alcoholism. He is sick. He is irresponsible. He is played by Julius Harris, his very first movie role. Julius Harris had been a nurse and a former prize fighter when he was in the military. But now he became an actor. He plays the role wonderfully, and he went on to a very, very long career in all different kinds of movies. There are some other people who are just marvelous in some of the secondary roles. Yaphet Kotto, for example, who later became a very important actor. This was his first movie as well. Small role, but he really stands out. And all of the casting is absolutely marvelous. And there are some interesting little things, again, that you find out from the video extras on the Criterion Collection new release of this wonderful movie. For example, when they were starting to film the movie, Mike Romer wanted the main actor, Ivan Dixon, to shave his mustache off because they felt that then his expressive face would be more fully visible. But Ivan Dixon explained that to a black man, a mustache could be extremely important, and so Mike Romer backed off. Okay, keep it. That's the way to go. We'll believe you. You're the expert on this. Another thing was the afro that Abby Lincoln had in those days. She had a real big afro hairdo. And the filmmakers were afraid that she might insist on keeping that because she was a civil rights activist and she identified herself very, very strongly as a black woman. So they thought she might want to keep her afro. But after all, the character she's playing, Josie, is a preacher's daughter, basically a very conservative young woman, and Lincoln immediately agreed to sacrifice her afro. She knew that Josie would never wear something like that, and so it had to happen. One more interesting little detail I'll give, and that is this movie has a lot of close-ups in it. Now, that in itself is not so remarkable. But again, talking in one of the video extras on this Criterion Collection release, Mike Romer says that there was a more or less a Hollywood taboo against showing black faces in close-up. I don't think this was necessarily a policy that the studios put into their public statements, but it was just kind of an instinctive thing that the studios did. They didn't like to show black faces in close-up. So, Mike Romer says, they deliberately shot a lot of this movie in close-up. Mike even says that he thinks there was an embargo on showing black people kissing, but they didn't feel that way at all. They didn't even think about it. So they went right ahead and they filmed all kinds of close-ups and they filmed kissing and they did all the things that you sort of weren't supposed to do. One more thing they did, by the way, which helps to give the movie a little bit more oomph, is there's terrific music on the soundtrack from black artists. Mary Wells, The Marvelettes, The Miracles, Martha and the Vandellas, even Little Stevie Wonder, and other people. So the movie also gets a lot of oomph from its the black music on the soundtrack. Now, I've been referring to Michael Romer as Mike Romer because I've met him more than once over the years. He's a lovely, lovely guy. I once, in fact, moderated a panel with him and Abby Lincoln on it, talking about this movie and other things. And so he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And one of the things he says in one of the video extras is that he doesn't like emphasis. He says, and I'll quote this, "Everything I do is non-emphatic. You may feel the tension all the way through, but the tension is subdued." And that is completely true. He doesn't like to hit things too hard. In that way, he's the opposite of the average Hollywood filmmaker. He likes to do things in subtle and nuanced ways. And in this movie, he really felt so close to the characters because, again, he really felt that the experiences he had as a Jew growing up in Germany and then coming to America were so similar to the kinds of experiences that African Americans had in the Deep South. He said he would never make another film about black people, and he never did, because he said he couldn't really identify with them beyond these things in common that Jewish people in Germany and black people in the South had. Once you get beyond that, and he handled that in this movie, he said he didn't have other things that that he could really identify with, and he really felt that he had to feel a subject from the inside in order to make a movie about it. So he never did make another movie about black life. In fact, unfortunately, he didn't make many other movies at all, but he made a few, and most of them are very, very good. Now, I've talked a lot about this movie being a black movie made by white people. So people might say, well, you know, does it really work? Is it really okay? Well, you know, after this movie was made in the later part of the 1960s and in the early 1970s, along came the Black Power movement and the Black Panthers and so forth. And a lot of black militants did become very suspicious when white artists were trying to explore black experiences. But this movie, Nothing But a Man, passed at least one very important test. And the actor Julius Harris talks about it in another one of these video extras. Here's what Julius Harris says. He says, I met Malcolm X in the street, and he came up to me and introduced himself, and he told me he loved Nothing But a Man. I thanked him. So that is quite an endorsement. Harris also says that every black person he's ever met who has seen the movie has dug it. And Julius Harris says, I guess it has become a classic. Well, it really has. So again, the title of the movie is Nothing But a Man. It's a lovely, warm, human drama. It has all kinds of progressive, positive things to say about race relations, while also pointing out all the difficulties in American race relations. It takes place in the 1960s. The movie was made in the 1960s, but it speaks very, very much to today. So I really want to recommend it. Find it on the Criterion Collection disc. Find it on streaming. Watch it. It's a wonderful, beautiful, warm human drama, Nothing But a Man. And so that is my somewhat 1960s-ish story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the film Nothing But a Man from 1964.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.